The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Howdy, folks. Welcome to We'll See You in Hell, the podcast brought to you by the Fangoria Podcast Network. You know, you want some info about the network or this podcast or other programs, how to find episodes of anything, including us, go visit Fangoria.com. Pat Walsh to my right.
Heyo.
Here for another contentious. Maybe not. This is, as you mentioned before we started, this is the first time we're going in not really knowing the other's opinion of the movie we're discussing.
Yeah, I don't think I said anything to you, and I didn't even know you saw it till about 10 minutes ago. But we will be discussing Don't Breathe.
Yes.
Which is, I guess, with Lights Out and all these, which I didn't see yet, unfortunately. But so many titles like that every time I want to say the title of this movie, I either say it wrong or forget what it is. It's a very generic horror title.
Something just dinged. I think my text message came. Yep, there we go.
Okay. Oh, louder.
Do you hear that? Do you hear the dings?
Of course I do.
I love this, man. Don't you love when people... What is the thing? Now, you heard three dings because I forgot to mute the speakers here. And the podcast or the text messages I was receiving were coming through the speakers. But you heard three dings.
Right.
Because these people these days, these goddamn people,
yeah,
won't consolidate their text messages. What is this shit where it's a sentence and then a word and then another thing and then another word and then another sentence? Put it all in a... Think about what you're writing first.
What this guy was doing is correcting because he autocorrect corrects everything. So when people be like, I meant this, I meant this, I meant this, I meant this, just assume the other person knows what you meant. Unless it says, like, I want to finger you, and it was supposed to say, like, I want to talk to you. But, yeah, I have friends who will send 10 texts to say something that you should say in one. If I got a lot to say, I say it in a giant paragraph. Not everybody has the all-inclusive plan.
It's absurd.
I do. I'm a man of great wealth and taste, but many don't.
But it's absurd. It's come on.
I agree.
Come on.
I agree.
Think about the goddamn thought first. We don't need a... I hate texting. I hate it. Phone
I
call.
Love it.
We're in and out.
It really repaired my relationship with my father, texting. We don't have to talk.
It sounds like it's repaired for all the wrong... In all the wrong ways for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
You know, doesn't sound like a good repair to me. Sounds like an old Band-Aid fix.
Yeah, that's what the Irish people and the Catholic people do.
What is with the Irish people with the emotions? You guys really
it's
don't
rough.
Like to
share rough.
Them or talk about them. Where does that come from? Is that from when you ran out of the potatoes?
I think it's from when we ran out of potatoes, yeah. There's that line in the Departed, the Irish are the only people that are impervious to therapy, and I feel like that might be true as well. You know, they're just a really closed off group of people. I don't know why it is.
But a lovable bunch. I was in Ireland.
Sure.
I was in Dublin for the Vodafone Comedy Festival a few weeks back. I made dear friends with some lovely Irish people out there.
Yeah.
They're wonderful. I'm going to Galway for Halloween weekend to do the Vodafone Festival up there.
Okay.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see these people again. I feel like I feel like John Candy in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. These are people like, if I'm ever trapped in Galway, I'll be like, I know a guy. He owes me a favor.
Sure, sure.
And we'll have a place to sleep, you know?
Did you make love to any fiery red-haired lasses?
Does lass mean male or female?
Dealer's choice.
then yes.
All right.
All right. We're here today to talk about Don't Breathe.
Don't Breathe. I know just what you're breathing.
Kept doing that the whole time I was in the theater in my head.
Yeah, I can't help it.
Yeah. I mean, this movie couldn't have come with higher recommendations.
It's being very well reviewed, you mean?
Very well reviewed, but also everybody I knew, aside from you, that had seen it was like, thumbs up, man.
Well, I give it a thumbs up as well.
I just mean I didn't talk to you about it.
Right. Especially for strolling into some horror movie off the street, not knowing anything, I thought, the twist was kind of admirably crazy, and it got nuts at the end, which I respected and loved.
Well, let's...
And that the first half I thought was very tense, and for me, it all pretty much worked.
Before we get to the end and the middle and all that stuff, this is just dawning on me now. This is probably a good thing to do. Maybe we just give a synopsis.
Sure. Sure.
I just realized we've never been doing that ever.
Yeah, I guess we will. When we do discuss the end, we'll have to give you some sort of spoiler alert.
This whole thing's a spoiler alert.
Probably so, yeah.
Pretty much. But for those of you that don't know, I'm sure all of you do, but if anybody doesn't, Don't Breathe is a story about a down-and-out single mom who's gotta make ends meet. So she gets a job in a diner with a sassy cook that doesn't take no for an answer and a group of waitresses that all like to shoot from the hip. And the main one's name is Alice. And it's a real fun romp.
Do you think that our listeners know the show Alice? I kept being like, is Joe really describing the plot of the sitcom Alice? And he was. Which came first, Alice? Alice was a sitcom based on the extremely depressing Scorsese film Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore.
Yeah, it's a real dark movie, and then they turned it into this sort of saucy
sitcom. It's a great Kiss My Grits comes from
Kiss
that, right?
Kiss My Grits with Flo, and then you had that guy that the only other thing I've ever seen him in was an episode of Tales from the Dark Side and the movie Loverboy with Patrick Dempsey.
Sure.
The guy that's like, you gotta marry an Asian woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. He's the no-nonsense cook.
Okay. No, I don't know if I've ever seen the show, but the movie is great if you want to see a different kind of Scorsese movie from early on in his career.
Do they say Kiss My Grits in the movie?
They do not.
That's...
Harvey Keitel plays like an abusive, like asshole pimp type character in it. Yeah, it's very different.
And this
is
what they turned into the sitcom.
Yeah, exactly. Chris Christopherson.
That's like what they did when Ed Asner was on Mary Tyler Moore, and then he had the spinoff, but it was like the gritty newsroom drama. It was like, what are you doing?
It's very strange.
I don't like when that happens. And I'll tell you another thing I don't like. I didn't care for those Wicked books.
Oh, the Wicked books. I don't know that anybody can finish those things. But did you like the musical?
I didn't see the musical, and I heard the musical is a disgraceful interpretation of the book, but I'll tell you something. The book, it had me sick to my stomach. They got the witch fucking dudes, and there's extremely graphic, descriptive sex sequences and things.
Oh, none of that is in the...
What the hell is this?
None of that is in the musical, I assure you. But that guy must have been so thrilled that he writes this smut, and then it makes him... hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars as a musical.
Yeah, the musical is for like little girls.
Little girls,
it's like for like 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
Don't Breathe in synopsis form is about it.
Let me do it.
All right, you go ahead.
Let me do it. It'll help sharpen my memory skills as well. So it's a woman and a kind of nerdy guy who kind of pines for her, and then her actual boyfriend, who's your standard movie scumbag drug dealer type, and the three of them break into homes for a living. She has a daughter. She lives with her seemingly abusive, checked-out parents, and she wants to get out from under their thumb and provide a better life for her daughter.
Well, her mom and her mom's deadbeat boyfriend.
Yeah, boyfriend, exactly.
And the mom at one point makes a joke that her girlfriend earns her money by sucking cock, which
that's her daughter. She tells her daughter, how are you making money? And then does the universal cock sucking.
And does it so essentially and so well.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to feel that scene.
So yeah, they decide, hey, and this all happened very quickly. I liked how economical it was. It was a short movie, kind of blasted through the plot points. But they're like, we found this guy. There were some plot holes here, to be honest with you. But they wanted to rob a blind guy who's like 60 years old. He just came into a large settlement because his daughter was hit by a car and killed. They said they know he's got at least $300,000 in the house. And at that point, I was kind of like, why isn't this money in the bank? Did I miss that? How do they know it's in the house, and why was it in the house? Are my two questions?
They had a series of hunches as to why it could be in the house.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly, one of which was the fact that he lived in this like uninhabited part of town.
Yeah, Detroit.
You know, it's kind of like based around this idea of like this guy is an angry veteran who's angry because his daughter's been killed. Doesn't trust the system, feels fucked over because the killer walked.
So they're just assuming he'll have his money in his house.
Probably the kind of guy that keeps his money under the bed and not in a bank or whatever. But then when they get into the house, they still say, they don't know for sure, when they get into the house, there's all those locks at the front door.
Right.
When they get to the house, and they go, why are there four locks? And he says, because this guy doesn't trust anybody because he's got all his money in here, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And then, surely enough, he does have his money in there.
He does. They decide they're going to rob him.
And then it goes horribly wrong.
Yeah, the main obstacle being that this guy has like military training, and of course the standard, as in all blind movies, the heightened sense thing, and he also has a giant killer dog.
He's got a giant killer dog,
and really, in the end, by the end, the movie becomes Cujo. It's there. There's a 20-minute sequence where it's just dog on woman. Not dog on woman, folks, but you know what I mean.
That was the original title for
dog
the film.
Dog v. Woman.
Yeah. Dawn of Justice.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. That's your basic plot point, and there's some heavy twists.
Yeah. Oh, heavy twists.
I like the movie. I thought it was well executed. I thought it was pretty airtight.
Well shot, certainly.
Very well shot.
Very cool shots.
You know, it was airtight. They really didn't miss a beat or anything.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the fact that they threw a few twists into it, and it wasn't just a sort of hunt, kill kind of thing. That all being said, I didn't leave the film feeling extraordinarily excited or...
Same here.
Or that I needed really to watch it ever again.
No.
But I did like it, you know, and I liked that Sam Raimi produced it. I liked the guy that did the Evil Dead remake, which I really loved.
I liked that a lot.
Directed it, and I thought he did a bang-up job. But yeah, I guess it is kind of taking you back to that, especially with Daredevil being on the so popular right now on Netflix. It's kind of hard to get excited about a blind guy that could do like all this stuff because his sentences were so heightened, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those like there's always like one comedy a year and one horror movie a year where you hear the premise and you're like, fuck, why didn't I think of that? But like, you know how these movies are always a deaf woman in the house and people are trying to kill her? What if it was the other way around? Like, it's a cool twist on that. Premise is good. And I thought everybody in it was... fine.
Yeah, you know, everybody did a good job.
It looked like it cost almost no money. It's doing very well. I always like that kind of a story.
I agree.
I felt the same. I wasn't energized. I wasn't pumping my fist. It's not the kind of movie where you are necessarily cheering or jazzed about what's happening.
Well,
they are breaking into a blind man's home.
One problem that I certainly... recognize, and I've heard other people point out about the film, is everybody in the film
sucks.
Is a piece of shit.
Yeah,
even
absolutely.
The blind guy who you initially feel bad for turns out to be fucking lunatic.
Yeah, I was actually kind of wondering, okay, these three are kind of self-absorbed and kind of annoying, and okay, the girl has a daughter, but I'm not really rooting for her.
Right.
Because she's robbing a blind man. I was kind of like, how are they going to put us on the side of these three sneaking into the house because they're doing something that's very wrong.
Right.
And then sure enough, they show you exactly how when the first twist hits and you realize that this blind guy is a degenerate.
Well,
he's had some struggles.
Well,
life.
I mean, we already said spoilers through the whole thing. I mean, yeah. So they get in. They assume that this bolted up basement is the place where the money is being kept because of the amount of security locks on the door. Then they get into the basement and they realize, no, in fact, what's being kept there is a woman, the woman that killed his daughter and walked free.
Yeah. She's tied up in a very kind of disturbing way in a room with like a bunch of cushions on the walls to muffle her screams.
Yes.
And it's a scene. It's a disturbing scene.
And then you later find out that the reason she is there is because he is artificially inseminating her.
Yeah.
To give him another baby since she took his baby from him.
Right.
Now, this is where my suspension of disbelief started to teeter a bit.
Okay, sure.
I mean, this woman's in a sophisticated harness.
Yeah.
Inside this guy's house, not just in his house, in his basement, which they make pretty clear, they show blatantly that the only way down into this basement from the inside is a ladder.
Yeah.
Not a staircase. And the only way from the outside is, you know, a traditional storm door. But there's like a sort of like a maze to get to where he keeps her. My point is I'm all for going into this idea of heightened senses and a guy being able to kick some ass. I was sitting there going, how the fuck did he get her down there?
Yeah.
How did he find her? How did he get her down? He has no ability to drive.
Then she's also, when they find her, she's clutching a newspaper article about what happened. I was kind of like, why does he have this lying around down here?
Right.
It's an issue. Like in Misery, when she's got that book of all the clippings of like crimes she's been involved in, it somehow doesn't really strain credibility because she's kind of like, you know, a bit of a fame seeker and it's just her own private album sitting in her house. This article like lying there to explain what she was the second they find her, I was kind of like, really? Did that happen?
Yeah, I didn't quite. Yeah, that's a great point. It was a little too convenient. It was like, how did he get her down there?
Yeah.
They say flat out he lost his sight in the war. He didn't lose his sight afterwards.
Yeah, I don't think would be able to get her down there and tie her up. And, you know, he's also...
Well, how did he get her, period? How did he find her?
He's injecting his semen into these women, and you're kind of like, he's not even fumbling around the vagina like to find where it goes. It can be hard to find out how to get into a vagina when you're fully sighted and stone sober.
I suspect that's where the sense of smell kicked in.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, perhaps. She has been down there in that basement for
It's an easy bit.
There was a lot of it where you're kind of like, okay, I thought the twist was going to be that he's not blind or something at that point.
That's what I thought. And that brings me to another point I had about the movie. There was a part of me that thought, does he really need to be blind? You know, I mean,
I think him being blind, as far as the marketing goes, is why that movie's a hit.
Sure. Sure.
But probably not.
But you're dealing with two different movies at this point. You're dealing with a guy that's blind who can defend himself. You pick the wrong house.
There is a dividing line halfway through when they go to that basement and find her where it is a different movie. I was like, okay, now I'm watching a different movie. Not enough From Dusk Till Dawn kind of way, but I liked that aspect of it. It felt... I never got bored, certainly. It was short, quick, and the twists when they came really kind of set you on a new path, and I was on board.
What about, too, the thing, you know, the kid, the boyfriend character, he releases that gas in the guy's bedroom, and he's like, yeah, he's lights out. He's knocked out. Don't worry about it. And then the guy's not.
And they don't explain that. So I was like, did he...
And he also acts startled when he realizes people are there, but not startled like... to the benefit of him tricking them, startled, like genuinely fucking startled and reacting to it.
Yeah. Shooting at the cell phone and all that kind of stuff. Because when that went off, I was like, am I to believe that A, it was a faulty smoke bomb, or B, that due to his military training, he developed sensitivity to gases? And they don't explain it, but...
When he first alluded it, because I was like, obviously he's not going to fall prey to this trap or whatever.
Right.
My assumption was he's faking like he doesn't know they're there,
mm-hmm.
but he does.
Right.
But then when he does encounter them, again, it's not like he acts... Well, maybe he doesn't. I'm not remembering correctly. But I don't think he acts... He doesn't act frightened.
No.
And then tricks them and then beats the shit out of them. He like is like, oh, shit, somebody's here, and goes into action pretty quickly after that.
Yeah.
And I think like what they were doing through the whole movie is they sort of build this guy up to be this superhuman killer, like in the way you would a Freddy or a Jason, like he just keeps coming or whatever. You know, which is why I didn't like the ending. Like that scene at the end where the guy gets beat in the face multiple times with a fucking lead pipe or a crowbar or something, and then he falls backwards flat onto his fucking tailbone, basically.
The nerdy kid.
No, the guy.
Oh, the guy. Because the nerdy kid also fell on his back. I mean...
Yeah. At the very end, I'm talking about...
Everyone in the movie takes savage beatings and are shot multiple times, and everyone's fine, I guess, till they're not, but it's... They stretch credibility
she
there.
She beats him repeatedly with the pipe, and then the bad guy, and then he falls, blind guy, and then he falls backwards onto his back, which would break your back. So, okay, fine. Then she sees the news reel in the train station when she's about to get away, and she sees that, oh, no, he's alive. She's like, he's alive? Okay, fine. And then it's like, he sustained some injuries, but he's doing okay. And I'm like... Yeah. That's absurd.
Yeah.
You would literally have brain damage. And then on top of it, she's got this look on her face like where she's like, oh, my God, he's still alive. He could find me. And I'm sitting there going, what are you worried about? This guy's a fucking blind guy who's in the middle. You're home free. You're gone. He's never going to find you. But then.
But they are 1,000,000% going to do a sequel.
Well,
I would say there's no chance they're not. So they are going to have him, I guess, I bet they'll amp it up even more, him having some sort of super... powers almost, not Freddy style, because I think they'll keep it grounded enough that he's just a man, but I think they'll try to play up the sense stuff, because he's going to be traveling the globe to find her.
Or they're going to
And he will find her, or there's no second movie.
Or they're going to say, this guy was Black Ops.
Right.
So fine. But here's the thing, too. So then, I saw this movie with my friend James Pinkstone, who I often reference. And we left the theater, and I said, I'm just a little confused. Why does she look scared at the end? She's home free. She's going to California, for Christ's sakes.
Right.
He said, no, that's not what it was. It's not that she's scared. It's that she realizes he's still alive and that the money she has is dirty because he's going to do this now to another woman. And I said, he's not going to do it to another woman. He did it to the woman who killed his daughter for justice, and then he tried to do it to her because she... inadvertently made him kill the woman.
Right.
He's not a lunatic in that sense. He doesn't want to do this to women. He wanted justice for his daughter.
Yeah, so it didn't even occur to me that he wanted to knock up another woman.
No, and then I read the original ending
when
we got home, and I was like, dude, I hate to say it, I was right. The original ending of the movie was him walking through the train station with his... And I'm like, this is...
Well, that you wouldn't buy at all.
This is absurd.
Yeah.
This is absurd.
Yeah.
You just can't do that. Like, how the hell would he even know what train she was on?
He would not. Part two, he's tracking her to California, though, guaranteed. You know what? If I'm sitting down right now and they gave me a week to write Don't Breathe 2, Keep Not Breathing, then I would
Still Don't Breathe.
Still Don't Breathe. I would start it with him kind of asking around town, finding out where she lived, finding that deadbeat couple that you hate anyway, the mom and the boyfriend,
right.
And they'd give her up immediately. They know where she went in California. They go in. If he kills those two, you don't care. They're deadbeats. And there it is. I mean, he can track her that way pretty easily.
It's a good point. It's a good point.
If you remember that. That's the thing. You know, when Don't Breathe 2 comes out 2 years from now, and he goes to that couple's house, I'll be like, what? What the fuck? Like, people have a real good memory for that kind of stuff. With a movie like this, the details go away in a couple weeks for me. But it's like, in a sequel, like, if they don't take the time to tell you what's going on, I'm like, what are we doing here?
I remember. I'd like to cite the episode where Pat thought the movie Vacation was a straight-up remake of the original Vacation.
Not that long ago.
And Chevy Chase just happened to be in the movie playing a guy named Clark Griswold.
Yeah, because a year had passed, and I don't need to remember details of that, of a comedy.
I'm just saying.
That's how I feel. But I do remember Don't Breathe, remember everything about it, and I think that's probably how they'll kick things off.
That's a great theory. I wouldn't be surprised, and that would help.
Also, you know, I'm sure we're going to get people who say, like, blind doesn't mean you can't do anything. You can do a lot of things
blind.
Well,
of course it doesn't mean that.
But he doesn't know this girl's name. He doesn't know anything about them.
That's what I'm saying. How does he even find out where she lives?
Yeah.
How does he find the parents? I mean, you can only sniff so much. He sniffs a lot in the movie. But, like, you can't sniff your way to somebody's house.
It could be, if you want to get real stupid with it, I've seen stupider things in movies. He's out walking his dog, and the dog's, like, starts going wild because it smells the girl and brings her up to the door. You know, maybe that's it.
Stupid. That's pretty damn lucky.
Yeah. No, I know.
Is the dog alive? It was left in that car.
I think the dog was alive.
Does
wasn't
he
it?
Get the dog?
That shit too. I mean that's straight up Cujo. That's, you know, the dog in the car. That went on and on and on. I was surprised by how much time was devoted to the dog, because now it's not really a movie anymore about this blind guy coming after them. It's just a dog attack.
Well, also too, this is your eye dog?
Yeah.
The
exactly.
dog that's liable to murder somebody at any second?
Anyone apparently who speaks around the dog, it tries to kill.
Yeah.
So, all right.
It tries to attack them before they even descend on the property.
Yeah.
It's like they're just in the neighborhood, and the dog tries to attack them, and it is Cujo style. It jumps up on the window.
Yeah. And what did you think was the benefit of dragging, showing the climax of the movie, him dragging the girl by her hair down the middle of the street? Why do they show you that in the beginning? I never understand that in movies. Why show me the ending at the beginning?
That didn't bother me. I thought that was a nice misdirection of, you think she's dead and then she's not, and it goes
right,
past
there.
This point. I don't mind when a movie does that. What I did mind was a blind guy dragging a dead or a lifeless supposedly body behind him down a street with no cane or dog or anything, and just walking perfectly to his front door.
How does
it's
he
like
even know where his house is?
Maybe he counts the steps. I don't know.
I got a lot of questions about just blindness in general. Because I don't know how they do stuff. I'm very curious.
Well, you count steps.
Yeah.
I know that. But obviously, it's feeling, whether it's with a cane or your hands, it's sounds and things like that. But my point is... you can count steps all you want. I guess that's the military thing, but I just don't believe that this guy... How does he find where their car is parked? Well, he goes to where the dog's barking.
Right.
But there's no fucking way in hell this guy has gone from the exact place their car was parked and counted those steps. Like,
no.
Why would he ever have a need to do that?
No.
He doesn't even know where that is.
Exactly.
It's not like he's like, oh, my dog's in the place my dog is always in. He's like,
yeah.
I'm going to the sound of my dog, and now where the fuck am I? I have to get home.
Right. I think, to its credit, it moves so fast to not allow you to really think about those things. But, yeah, when it ends, I think the reason you don't feel like you've seen some great movie is that you leave kind of going, but wait a minute. And as soon as you start picking at it, it does kind of fall apart.
Well, yeah, I hadn't picked at it till now, and now I'm getting upset. Now... I'm upset it didn't go in the direction also that I wanted it to go in, which I thought it was going to be a man that had like a booby-trapped house.
Home Alone style.
Yeah, like all kinds of contraptions. And then I thought at the end of the movie, he would call her into his office and he'd give her the house, like at the end of Willy Wonka.
Right.
And all of her dreams would come true. He'd be like, it's all yours. The money's all yours. You passed the test.
Yeah.
You know?
I didn't mind.
I wanted more out of that from you. I thought that was a very funny...
No, I think that would have been a great film. I didn't mind the twist in it, though, because to me, I was like, boy, I bet nobody expected this twist. And it wasn't like a fun twist. You're like, oh, God. And then it just kind of keeps getting worse. I mean, you see at one point a giant vial full of jizz.
It's a turkey baster.
Yeah. And then she shoves it into his mouth. And
And he gags on it and you see his own jizz come out of his mouth.
Right.
I didn't need to see that.
And I'll tell you, though, to me, anytime you get a whole audience to go like, ah, then you've really done your job. And the audience reacted to that in a very big way.
Right. Well, look, it's one of the reasons I have such immense admiration for the end of Pink Flamingos. I mean, it's...
Sure?
Yeah. I do want to see you make somebody eat a piece of dog shit on camera. Like,
yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Somehow that doesn't offend me. The jizz turkey baster upset me a little bit.
Oh, it didn't upset me at all. That's what...
Here's the thing.
Jizz, it's like when people saw Slumdog Mary and people go out of their fucking heads. That scene, you know, I was an usher when that movie came out, and I used to, like, basically watch the entire movie, but I'd go in for the big scenes, the dog attack, the jizz in the hair, because you'd watch these crowds just lose their fucking mind. But I wonder why jizz is kind of such a last frontier for movies when 50% of your audience jerks off every day.
Mm-hmm.
The other 50% has been in contact with jizz or pissed it out of them or spat it out or washed it off their hands a million times. Why is jizz this last frontier? And also, all these people watch porn.
Right.
What is it? You know? And when people get all up in arms about anything in a movie, sex, especially sex, you all watch porn.
Well, Pat, it's a disgusting fluid. I mean, I don't know what you want to tell you. It's like why hasn't the territory of period blood been tackled yet? It's gross.
Well, it was in Carrie.
Well, it was pig's blood.
No, well, the beginning, she gets her period in the shower.
I don't think they show the period blood, though.
They do. And everyone yells, plug it up, and starts throwing tampons at her.
Where do you see the blood, though? Is it going the drain?
Down her legs and down the drain, yeah.
All right, well, I mean, there's one movie that did period blood, and one other movie did cum.
Yeah, I mean, Happiness had cum, whatever. But I think
it's a revolting movie. I detest the film.
Happiness?
I resent that it exists.
I
resent that it exists.
I loved Happiness so much, but, you know, that's a movie where having it in my collection honestly worries me, that someone will see it and arrest me.
Well, I had little children in my collection for a while. That's gone. That's long gone.
Yeah.
A girlfriend gave it to me years ago, and Julie McCullough said, have you seen it? And I said, no. And he said, you need to examine your relationship that your girlfriend just gave you that movie.
Yeah,
as
I think
a present.
We talk about that on here. I agree.
But
I agree.
I've said it to you before. I got as far as the jizz hitting the wall and then him putting the postcard on it, and I was like, this is fucking disgusting.
But see, let me press you on that for 1 second. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You've watched in your life 10,000 hours of pornography?
Yeah.
Why does that bother you? When you know it, this is actually fake and not being shot out of a penis.
Because it's not a scene of two people fucking consensually and enjoying it. It's a scene of fucking...
Well, he's not fucking anyone. He's just masturbating.
Yeah. He's an immensely perverted shut-in who calls people and jerks off to their voices and then yells, is your pussy wet? Is your pussy wet? As he comes on. It's just so depraved. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. It's so gross. And it's like, it's not enough that, okay, there's this weird wrong number scenario and then, oh, that's weird. And then you realize, wait, this guy's crazy. And then it's like, well, no, wait, that's not enough. No, wait, hold on. Now he's going to say, is your pussy wet? Wait, that's not enough. He's jerking off. And you're like, oh, okay. No. Wait. We're going to show the cum hit the wall. We're going to cross cut that with Philip Seymour Hoffman's scrunched red face of ecstasy. Just, you know. And then if that's not enough, the cherry on top is he puts the fucking postcard over it.
Yeah.
And then goes and talks to his neighbor like he was fucking bacon cookie. It's just gross, man. And I know that's the point. This is what goes on behind closed doors in the suburbs.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, I mean, it is meant obviously to provoke a reaction out of you, but I was certainly shocked by it when I saw it in high school. I hadn't seen a lot of movies like that, but at the same time, people will really get upset about fluids and watch porn, I've never understood, personally. You know, that's it. I understand that, you know.
I'm not upset about fluids. I'm upset about the scenario.
Yeah.
Porn is not somebody jamming a turkey baster filled with cum that's meant to rape and impregnate somebody.
Yeah. Well, now he said, Joe, that he's never been raped.
Yeah, and then the guy is choking on his cum. It's a different story. I also don't like the porn. I also don't like the porn where they take the girl's head and she's like,
Yeah, of course not.
The girl's doing those scenes a lot of times like that. Like, I don't like it. I don't care if she's into it or not. I don't like it.
There is so much of that that there must be lots of people that like that, and that worries me and troubles me.
Yeah, well, you know, it's
there's a lot of things that trouble me, frankly.
If you like it, you like it.
Sure.
But all of the scenarios I'm describing that I don't like.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like that kind of porn, even though some of the girls seem to like it. But
right.
But the things I'm saying from these movies that I don't like are things that are involving other people and depravity and the people that don't want to be in those situations. And it makes it gross.
Well, what you might not have gotten to if you stopped it after that is that at the end of Happiness, the boy, the young boy,
yeah,
who's his father molested his friend.
Yeah.
He masturbates, and then excitedly he goes, I came! And he's all excited, because he finally got his chance to come. And then the dog comes in and eats the cum.
And isn't this the same kid that asks his dad, why won't you molest me?
Right, which they kind of did in Always Sunny as well, years later.
I mean, it's just gross, man. It's horrible.
Yeah, no, Happiness is
and by the way,
is a
like,
fucked up movie, but I do love it.
You can't, and this is my thing with a lot of those Todd Solondz,
yeah.
Whatever, guy can do whatever he wants, I don't care. It's not for me. But, you know, the defense for a lot of these types of grittier cinema is, hey man, these things happen, and this is like, he goes into the minority of things that are of terrible things that are happening out there, and then goes into the minority of the minority, where even the molester would be like, this is fucking gross, dude. Why is his kid asking him that? You know what I mean? He goes into such a small percentile that it's like, dude, I don't understand like how I'm in any way supposed to relate to this. Like, who is this for?
Well, me, apparently. I mean, I really did love Happiness, and I think I loved Welcome to the Dollhouse. Welcome to the Dollhouse for me is one of the only movies where the bullying feels realistic to me. Whenever I see bullying in movies and it's not like the worst thing I've ever seen, I'm like, I don't relate to that. I had it worse.
Right.
The kids in the documentary bully, I'm like, no, I had it worse than all these kids.
Right. I thought Welcome to the Dollhouse was good.
Storytelling is half a good movie. I watched half a Wiener Dog last night before I fell asleep.
Was it good?
Which is his latest. I enjoyed it.
Why isn't the same girl the girl? That bugs me. Why is Greta Gerwig suddenly the girl from Welcome to the Dollhouse?
Well, I had just gotten to Greta Gerwig, but Wiener Dog is essentially about a wiener dog. It's about an actual dog.
But Greta Gerwig's character is the girl from Welcome to the Dollhouse.
That's true.
So it's like, why isn't it just the other girl?
He's done that a bunch. He did Life During Wartime, which was all the Happiness characters played by completely different people.
Okay.
So you know that's tough on a guy like myself. But I did my best with it.
What are you doing, Slons? This guy couldn't follow the latest Chevy Chase vehicle.
I think Paul Rubens played the Philip Seymour Hoffman role, although I'm probably wrong with that. By the way, we give a lot of wrong information on this podcast. I was listening to an older one, and you talk so much about your love of Justin Lin and his direction of The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2 and Dead Silence, and you're speaking about James Wan.
Oh, yeah.
Justin Lin is the other Asian director who did Fast and the Furious and Star Trek and all that.
No, but wait a second.
James Wan is horror. Justin Lin is Fast and the Furious.
No, I thought the guy that did The Conjuring also did Fast and Furious.
No.
Wait a minute.
No.
I
am sure. I'm just saying, folks, sometimes we say the wrong thing in here. We don't have a fact checker listening. Don't be mad at us. He meant James Wan. Who is a great director, as is Justin Lin.
Hold on. I think that James Wan directed Star Trek, though.
Justin Lin directed Star Trek. But yeah, Wiener Dog, you know, I'm watching it. It honestly felt sort of like a family comedy almost, which is very
weird.
No, the
weird. New one. James Wan directed the new one.
No, he
didn't. Seven. Yes, he did. Justin Lin directed Fast and Furious 6. Hold on. That's what I meant.
James Wan directed Dead Silence, The Conjuring, and The Conjuring 2.
Hold on. Director. MacGyver TV. Yeah, Furious 7.
Was what? Was who?
James Wan. He didn't direct Star Trek. That's where I got confused. Who the hell directed Star Trek?
The new Star Trek was directed by Justin Lin.
Well, James Wan directed Furious 7.
That's crazy.
I got it on IMDb right here. You don't believe me?
No, I do. We're mixing them both up, which doesn't look good for us. Frankly. I had no idea James Wan had ever gone out of the horror world. Frankly.
Yeah, he directed, and that's why I thought he directed Star Trek 3 as well, but he didn't. That was Justin Lin. I got confused. I'm sorry.
Okay, so James Wan
and
did.
Justin Lin also directed two episodes of True Detective, which I also got confused and thought that was James Wan.
James Wan did Saw, Dead Silence, Death Sentence, Insidious, Conjuring, and then randomly Furious 7, the only action movie he'd done. So that's confusing for
right.
me. Because Justin Lin also did a Fast and the Furious movie.
He did Fast 6.
Yeah, and I believe he did Tokyo Drift.
He did Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
And I think he did Fast and Furious 6.
Okay. All right.
Why do you think he did Tokyo Drift? Racist.
I thought he did do Tokyo
Drift. I'm joking.
Drift.
I'm saying why did you... I'm making a joke.
Justin Lin
racist.
Did Better Luck Tomorrow, which was like a pretty cool Asian heist movie. Yeah. All right. I'm glad we got that cleared up.
Well,
even though we seem more confused when we start.
Wrong information constantly, but what can you do?
Wiener dog, you know, it's like very tame.
Yeah, it's like a cute, it's like a Greta Gerwig movie, right?
Yeah, it's like there's the I'm watching it, not seeing any signs of Todd Solondz, and then the kid feeds the dog something he shouldn't, and the dog has so much diarrhea that I honestly was starting to get a little sick, and I fell asleep shortly thereafter, but. But
that's even supposed to be funny, right?
Yeah, but there's a Monty Python level of diarrhea.
Yeah, and Danny DeVito's in it.
Danny DeVito has not been in it yet, so I still have more to go.
He is in it.
Yes,
yeah,
I know.
Well, you think even Todd Solondz has got to hit a wall eventually.
You
where
would
he
think.
Goes, I'm tired of the N-bombs and
yeah.
the cum shots.
Yeah.
And
by the way, Justin Lin did direct Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift.
I didn't say he didn't.
Okay.
I was just making a joke that you were saying an Asian guy directed Tokyo Drift.
And two episodes of True Detective, bringing
yeah.
it back full circle.
All right. Let's go to some questions about, I almost said noises off.
I can answer any question you have about noises off because I love it.
About don't breathe. My friend John Kensel sent me a video for some reason. Let's go back to that because I don't know if that's actually a question. The video is titled, My Dad Found Out We're Irish and Not Italian.
Yeah, obviously that has nothing to do with this podcast, Joe.
Well, he responded to the tweet. You know?
Yeah, all right.
Lucifer Bruce writes, I wish John DeGuinio, the JFK researcher... I don't know how to say the name.
What?
Would become famous, Joe. You sound just like him.
Okay.
I sound like a JFK. Finally, I sound like a smart person.
All right.
Where are the don't breathe questions? Okay, here we go. Hi from a fellow Phoenixville guy. Hello, Cole. This comes from Cole Rothacker at ColeRothacker. I liked Don't Breathe. Wanted to know what you guys thought of the same director's Evil Dead remake.
Loved it.
I loved it. We mentioned it very, very briefly earlier, but I loved it. One of the things that keeps me loving it is the fact that I know many people that have said it was too brutal for them. They couldn't handle it. You know, my friend Jared Logan, who's a very funny comic and a writer.
Love Jared. Just did his podcast, by the way. Should be out soon.
Jared's a great guy. Jared had said to me, and Jared has, you know, sits through some pretty brutal stuff and has made fun of me for thinking a movie like Antichrist was extreme.
Yeah.
But he said that after the scene where the woman is sawing her own face off,
yeah,
if it got any worse, he was going to have to leave the theater because it was too much for him to handle. But I loved it. I thought it was great. And anybody, I finally get a chance to say this in a forum where it matters, really bothered me that reviews of that film, the biggest criticism it was getting was, misses all the humor of the original. And it's like, no. The first Evil Dead doesn't have any humor in it.
Right.
The first one is a straight horror movie. Evil Dead 2, which is a loose sort of remake of Evil Dead 1, has humor in it.
Yeah.
But it's not a fucking slapstick comedy.
Yeah, and also they are clearly going in a different direction with the remake. It's like they're not trying to be funny in any way, so what do you want? I thought, honestly, the kind of over-the-top nature of the Evil Dead remake was in its way funny. Sometimes something can be so intense that I sort of just laugh out of panic, and I was doing that in the Evil Dead remake. There was some crazy shit in it. I much preferred watching it in a theater than I would have at home by myself. I had a good time with it.
Well, the girl sawing her face off with a piece of broken glass was
rough. It was tough.
I also saw that movie with my friend Jim Pinkstone, and I remember the way the scene goes. It's black, and you just hear, so you know what she's doing before you see it.
Right.
I remember him turning to me and going, "Jesus."
Yes.
And I was honestly scared to see like what we were going to see when the lights went on.
Yes, that was rough, certainly.
It was fantastic, though. Okay, here's another one from Lucifer Bruise. Okay. He sent a bunch today. Discuss a remake you would like to see. Not one that succeeded, but one that almost got it right or disappointed you. So that's, you know, sort of on the topic because the Evil Dead guy did this. One that almost got it right or disappointed. You know, I'll go ahead. You go first.
A remake that got it right or almost got it right?
He's saying, don't talk about a remake that got it right, but what's a remake you wish would have gotten right, but it kind of missed the point or
kind of missed the mark?
You were disappointed in it.
I mean, everyone I'm disappointed in, it seems like, to some degree. We talked at length on here about the Poltergeist remake, which is about as bad as it gets, where you take away all the heart, all the soul, you get the story wrong, you get the laughs wrong, you get everything wrong.
Yeah, that was...
And that's a Sam Raimi joint, too, you know? Like
it was?
Yeah, he produced that.
That was a real letdown, that one. And I mean, there's no bigger Sam Rockwell fan on earth than me.
Right.
And I just was so disappointed at how bad that was.
You know, there's so many horror remakes. The Stepfather remake was pretty weak. The Amityville Horror remake was...
I like the Amityville
all
remake.
All right, yeah.
I enjoyed the Amityville remake. And I also enjoyed the Omen remake.
Yes, I like the Omen remake.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think horror is one where, more often than not, it's easy... If you're remaking kind of a lower-level horror film, which I think all the ones we just discussed are. But you can't do Poltergeist. Nobody's attempted The Exorcist. You're not going to do it better. The Shining remake you watched recently, I did not.
It's got its moments. It's okay. Not... And it's... You know, Stephen King would probably slit our throats if he heard us call it a remake.
Yeah.
You know, to him it was, the proper adaptation.
Right, right.
I've been pretty pleased with most of the horror remakes I've seen. You know, not terribly disappointed.
Yeah.
The two I'd like to discuss is one that people hated and got panned so much that they're going to reboot it again with different people and a different crew. But I liked the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. I thought it was fun. I thought they made Freddy scary again. I thought Jackie Earle Haley was a great Freddy. I thought he looked scary.
Okay.
I liked the dream sequences. I thought they played good homage to the first one. Like, I liked it. I liked the twist where you kind of thought he might be innocent for a minute, and then it turns out that he wasn't. I liked all that stuff. I thought they did as good a job as you probably could have with that daunting of a task. You know.
You like the Halloween remake?
I hate the Halloween remake. Again,
It made me feel terrible, but I didn't hate it.
But again, it's Rob Zombie doing this thing where it's like,
yeah,
it's so in your face depraved.
Yeah.
It's not enough that they're a struggling family and the stepdad's kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
And the daughter's fucked up. But then also he hits on her and says he wants to fuck her at breakfast or whatever. It's like, gee, for Christ's sakes, man. Like,
and was that you I discussed that, like, even the janitor that took care of him when he was a kid, he kills that guy?
Yeah. Maybe and then like
you're
later,
kind of like, God,
that was discussed somewhere.
Can you give me one moment of hope or feeling? Or
yeah, that was discussed somewhere where Rob Zombie, I think, said like he had to do that. So you knew Michael Myers was crazy or whatever. But
yeah,
I guess.
I got it. I got
but,
it.
Like, but I'll tell you my be all end all. Like no remake made me more disgust. I threw it away. I threw it in the trash.
Go on.
It's one of the only horror movies. It's one of the only movies, period, I've ever thrown directly in the trash.
Yeah.
Texas Chainsaw. Not
Oh, yeah.
Not the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake with Jessica Biel. I liked that a lot. I thought that was really good.
Oh, I hated it.
I liked the Biel one, and The Beginning, which is the prequel to that, I thought was passable. Texas Chainsaw, I'm talking about, the one that came out 2 years ago.
Didn't see it.
Or 3 years ago, was in 3D. What a fucking pile of shit.
Yeah.
What a pile of shit. The only Texas Chainsaw movie to ever use CG effects and terrible CG effects at that. Laughably like Sci-Fi Channel bad.
Yeah.
CG effects of blood. Of blood. Why are you computer generating blood right now?
Is that for 3Ds? They can make it splash out.
I guess so. I don't fucking know. It was so dumb. There's this thing at the beginning where, like, it picks up right where the original movie ended, and this vigilante group from the town comes, and they firebomb Leatherface's house.
Okay.
And then I was watching the, and then, like, Leatherface sort of becomes this, like, anti-hero through the movie, which, fuck off. I don't want to see that.
No.
And then I was watching the behind-the-scenes vignettes or whatever, and one of the producers goes, is what Leatherface's family did in the first movie horrific? Absolutely. But what those vigilantes did was worse. Because whether you're criminal or not, everybody deserves due process. And that's how we got you on Leatherface's side. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? You lunatic. This is what happens to people that
somebody should talk to that guy, you know, behind bars for a minute and make sure we're okay letting him out.
But this is what happens to people that live in this fucking land. This is fucking Hollywood for too long.
Yeah.
This sun eats away their goddamn brains.
Yeah.
They think everybody is redeemable in some way. And they go, well, how do we make this guy likable? Actually, when they made that Godzilla shit remake with Matthew Broderick.
Yeah. And then the other shit remake with Cranston.
And Broderick's was shittier.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
they actually and the monster looked nothing like Godzilla,
right?
And everybody's very mad, justifiably so. The lady who designed the monster goes, "We wanted a sleeker, sexier Godzilla." She said that. It's an exact quote. So what the fuck is wrong with these people?
Sexy Godzilla.
So that's my one that I really hated. But you know,
what I want to do before we wrap this up. Is I used to go through and talk about the movies I'd seen throughout the week. I haven't done that yet. I'm going to blast them out real quick. You tell me if you've seen them or not. The Wiener documentary. Fantastic.
I heard it's amazing. I want to see it.
It's funny. It's crazy. What he puts his wife through is
now
difficult shit.
Is he an anti-hero by the end of the movie?
I wanted a sexy wiener is why I watched it, and I got it. I saw... The Shallows, I think I talked about on here. Pretty good little thriller with Blake Lively. Worth a rent. It's not bad, folks.
Sure.
Not great. It's not bad.
Not interested.
Don't Think Twice, the improv movie that Mike Birbiglia did.
How was it?
I liked it.
I have friends in it, so I want to see it. Chris Gethard's a good friend, and I want to see it to support
There were
Chris.
Things in it that really kind of made me cringe, and I don't know if it was because I was relating to them or because... You know, as with all movies about comedy, the improv scenes themselves are kind of extremely not funny. And you can tell they're scripted. So it was hard to view these guys as geniuses. when you're not laughing at their stuff. But all the stuff in it about professional jealousy and your friends taking off and stuff like that was all very relatable, and I thought it was a good movie about a subject I hadn't really seen before. Southside with You, the Barack Obama, Michelle Obama first date movie. Movie was fucking adorable.
Yeah.
I don't normally call something cute. It was really cute. And like they, it was, you really felt almost like you were watching Barack Obama. The actors they got for these two were incredible. It's like 80 minutes long. I thought it was a very sweet movie and I liked it a lot. Okay.
Now, do you think it would have been distracting had they had Jordan Peele playing Obama?
I think I would have liked that too.
Okay.
But the guys they got, man, they must have been casting this thing forever because they really knocked it out of the park. Sausage Party, I hated.
You saw all these movies this week?
No, over the past couple months.
Okay.
I didn't laugh at all. I don't know what the reviews are about. The audience I saw it with was silent as well, and the group of people I saw it with didn't like it. I root for comedy, though, so I hate that I didn't like it, but there we go. War Dogs I thought was fun.
Right.
Jonah Hill is shockingly obese in it.
Was that for the role, do you think?
I think he probably got super fat and then decided to say it was for the role.
Okay.
But it's a Goodfellas ripoff. I think, what's his name? That old school, why can't I? Todd Phillips. I think he really knows how to direct a movie and make it look cool. You know, it's nothing amazing, but it's a good time passer. It was fun.
I wanted to see it, and at the last minute I bailed because I rewatched the trailer with my mom. We were thinking about seeing it, and as soon as I saw the overhead camera shot of Jonah Hill doing coke and throwing his head back,
yeah, no, it's
HBO's Vinyl style, I was like, I'm not interested.
There's a scene at the end where the narration's like, and you know what the one thing that brought us down was? It's almost the exact same line as Goodfellas, right. And
he addresses the camera.
Yeah, it's fun enough, I would say. It's a fun, okay movie. I saw Bad Moms, which was really bad, folks, as you can imagine.
I mean,
I think Mila Kunis is delightful, and I wish she got better material. I'll say one positive thing about
it. I think most of the people in that movie are delightful. It just doesn't look like a good movie.
Yeah, no, it wasn't good. And I'll end on a real great one, which was Hell or High Water.
I'm going to see that this week.
With Jeff Bridges, who has either gotten older and weirder or he's doing a character, but his voice in this thing is insane. He's like, well, I'll tell you something else, dear. He's like doing almost like a Walter Brennan voice. But it's him, Ben Foster, Chris Pine. Everybody in the movie is fucking great. It's tight as shit. It's exciting. Cool dialogue. It felt like kind of like a No Country for Old Men Jr. You know, it's not that good, but it's great.
I'm going to see that this week when I am on the road. And well, look, what did I watch all month? Because I was away.
What'd you see?
Scotland. Well, I saw Suicide Squad, which we discussed on the last show. But I spent most of my free time when I had time to watch things watching every single Alan Partridge thing I could find.
Oh, I fucking love Alan Partridge, and I always have.
All of it was streaming on Netflix in the UK, and it's not streaming here, and I immediately went on to Amazon to buy everything.
I own it. You can get a box set of everything he's done.
Yeah.
Partridge, Saxondale, all that great shit, and it's about $60.
I got it on order.
Incredible.
I got it on order. I'm getting that, and I'm getting the Knowing Me, Knowing You box set.
Awesome. That's in there, too.
And Alpha Papa.
Alpha Papa is surprisingly very funny.
I love it. I saw that one. That's all I'd ever seen.
When he's crawling out the window, I think I recommended it to you, actually. When he's crawling out the window and his pants fall off and he's hanging there bottomless. Yeah. I mean, it's not the most advanced comedy, but I laughed my ass off. I think Steve Coogan is one of the funniest men in the world. And a guy who, outside of like The Trip, where he's playing himself and stuff he's generated himself, they never get him right. He's never had a part worthy of his skills, except like 24-Hour Party People or something more like a drama.
I love everything I've seen the guy do. I look forward to seeing more.
Yeah.
And I also started watching Baskets, which I really enjoyed.
Baskets is great. The Easter Brunch episode is maybe the best TV episode of the year. Almost maybe emotional.
Beautiful.
I think Louis Anderson steals the goddamn show.
He's fantastic in it.
Yeah.
The gag at the drive-thru of, which is such a writer's room gag, which made me really love it, with a bunch of guys, you can see the writer's room sitting around being like,
sure.
What if he just ordered every wrong soda?
Yeah, yeah.
Like every wrong soda. And then by the time it gets to Schweppes, and he's just screaming, Schweppes.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very strange, unusual, funny show, and I liked it quite a bit.
Folks, that's our show today. I have a lot to plug. Forgive me. I will be, God, when is this coming out? This will be out next week. Look, if it hasn't passed the 15th of the month yet, I'll be in old Scottsdale, Arizona at Stand Up Scottsdale. But I have a feeling this is probably coming out the week after that just happened. So if it is, please, October 13th, come and see my special, the taping of my one-hour Comedy Central special. It is happening in Los Angeles at the Masonic Temple at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery, Thursday, October 13th. I believe we're going to do two shows. Go online to get tickets for that.
Check
that out. Patty Walsh will be there. And check out the new short fiction column, Some Severe Situations. I guess two or three stories are out by now. And that's on Fangoria.com as well.
I am on Twitter, Vine, Instagram at ThePatrickWalsh. Last time I told you I was going to be on the High and Mighty podcast. This time I'll tell you I'm going to be on the Secret Masters with Jared Logan. Every week he discusses a different topic in entertainment. This time we did mob movies. It was a lot of fun. That's all I really got. Thank you for your five-star reviews, your great comments. We love getting your feedback on Twitter. Thanks, gang.
You've been listening to We'll See You in Hell, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Thomas DeFeo, executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about We'll See You in Hell, contact Ken at ken@fangoria.com.